Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Doug Tribou. The 2009 death of Joshua Messier, a schizophrenic patient at Bridgewater State Hospital, raised important questions about how the institution cares for people who are prone to violence.
Now the attention is turning to the office of Plymouth County District Attorney Timothy Cruz. A medical examiner ruled that Messier's death was a homicide caused by prison guards restraining him. But Cruz decided not to pursue criminal charges.
The medical examiner, Mindy Hull, has accused the district attorney of misrepresenting her medical opinion on Messier's death. Michael Resendiz of the Boston Globe has been following this story, and he joins us now. Mike, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thanks a lot. Good to be here.
Mike, what did Mindy Hull, the state medical examiner, actually say about Messier's death?
Mindy Hull said that Joshua Messier's death was a homicide, meaning his death was caused at the hands of another person or other persons. And she said that his death was caused by, specifically, cardiac arrest and compression of chest while being restrained. And that describes the video evidence in this case of what happened that night from the very beginning when Joshua apparently hit a guard to the point where he was taken to Bridgewater's intensive treatment unit, suitcased, as they say, and then placed in four-point restraints.
And describe what you mean when you use the term suitcased.
Suitcasing or being put in a clamshell position, as the judge in the judicial inquest called it, is when an individual has his hands cuffed behind his back and is in a seated position, and correction officers push down hard on the patient's back to the point where the patient's chest is touching his knees. So he's folded all the way over. And that is a position in which, quite clearly, it's very difficult to breathe.
As we mentioned, the medical examiner, Mindy Hull, is taking issue with a statement that District Attorney Timothy Cruz made to the Boston Globe a couple of years ago. What did he say?
This was a very long statement that was given to me when I was investigating Joshua's death. It was about a page and a half long, single-spaced typed. But ultimately, what it said at its conclusion was that Mindy Hull, the medical examiner, had decided that it was Joshua Messier starting a fight with guards that ultimately led to his death. And Mindy Hull takes exception to that because she feels that although there is nothing specific in the statement that she would say is inaccurate, she feels that the way it is worded near the end of the statement makes it seem as though she said that Joshua was responsible for his own death, and that's not what a homicide is.
So there's obviously a big difference between misrepresenting, which is what the medical examiner is saying the district attorney has done here, and misunderstanding. Do you have a sense of whether Timothy Cruz misunderstood Hull's position or whether he may have intentionally sort of reframed her thoughts?
Well, he did intentionally reframe her thoughts. There's no doubt about it. I mean, Mindy Hull filled out the official death certificate. She completed an autopsy, and she reached her findings. There's no doubt about the fact that Tim Cruz reframed her findings in a way that he thought explained the situation and justified his decision to not pursue criminal charges.
The judge in this case has made an inquest, and that led to grand jury indictments against three former Bridgewater guards. Those came down last month. And a report from the judge was made public yesterday. Can you tell us a little bit about what it said?
Yeah. I mean, the bottom line is that the judge completely rejected Tim Cruz's legal reasoning in this case. What Tim Cruz said over and over again is that Mindy Hull could not identify a specific cause of death. In other words, she could not identify a single specific action taken by anyone that she could say unequivocally caused Joshua's death. And for that reason, Tim Cruz said, it was impossible to bring criminal charges against anyone. What the judge says is, hey, that's not what we need here. What we're looking for, it's is a series of events that caused the death. If the guards took action that contributed significantly to this man's death, then they should be charged with manslaughter at least, and that's what has happened.
I have to imagine that this kind of dispute between a district attorney and a medical examiner has got to be pretty rare. Is that your view of it?
Yes, this is very, very rare. This is highly unusual. It's highly unusual that you would find this kind of dispute between a district attorney and a medical examiner. It's highly unusual that you'd have an attorney general appoint a special prosecutor to investigate an alleged crime after the district attorney has decided to not pursue it. And it's even more unusual to have that special prosecutor call for a judicial inquest. So all of this is quite rare.
The district attorney, Timothy Cruz from Plymouth County, for his part, has responded with a statement of his own. He released that yesterday. Can you give us the gist of that?
Well, the gist of it is that Tim Cruz is standing by his original decision. He believes there's no justification for pursuing criminal charges against the guards, even though the medical examiner found that it was a homicide and even though there's pretty significant surveillance video evidence in this case.
Michael Resendiz is an investigative reporter and political writer for the Boston Globe. He's been following the case of Joshua Messier, who died at Bridgewater State Hospital in 2009. Mike, thanks for joining us.
Hey, my pleasure.
Eric McLeish is the attorney who represented Joshua Messier's mother, Lisa Brown, in her civil rights lawsuit over the treatment of her son. She received $3 million from the state. McLeish is calling for an investigation into the conduct of District Attorney Timothy Cruz's office. Eric McLeish joins us now. Welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thank you for having me. And just to be clear, I did not represent Mr. Messier's mom in the civil rights case. I did represent Mrs. Brown, Mr. Messier's mother, at the inquest, and I was allowed to cross-examine and introduce evidence by Judge Cove.
Okay.
So that was my role.
Thank you for the clarification. So you have called on Timothy Cruz's office in your comments about his work. You've called his legal reasoning in the case deeply flawed. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Sure. For the reasons that Mike articulated, number one, if you have multiple events that could lead to the death of another person, let's say there's 15 people that shoot guns at an individual, and this sometimes does occur, then the fact that you can't locate the bullet that actually killed the victim doesn't mean that everybody gets to go free. So Cruz's logic that there was no one single act that caused the death really misstated the very clearly established law in Massachusetts. And then the other point, of course, is that this was a mischaracterization that was offered by the district attorney. Supposedly the opinion of Dr. Hall, this outrageous assertion that this mentally ill man who developed schizophrenia when he was a freshman in college was responsible for a restraint that was in violation of all the regulations. This was offensive at the time, but what we didn't know until the inquest, which we weren't allowed to talk about until it became public yesterday, was that this was not what Dr. Hall said. Dr. Hall never changed her mind. She always believed that this was homicide. And in medical examiner parlays, that means death at the hands of another. So this was really extraordinary. I mean, this was a blatant mischaracterization of Dr. Hall's view that was used as a justification not to prosecute.
So, again, you're calling for an investigation into Timothy Cruz's work. Can you give us an idea of what you're hoping, what kind of answers you're hoping to get from that sort of investigation?
Well, look, I mean, you have to look at this, you know, both within Massachusetts and without. I mean, we have a national problem of a different standard, a much more difficult standard being applied when the target defendants are police officers or correctional police officers or correctional officials. And this is what I would like to call really a rush to exonerate that you see so often in the offices of prosecutors. We've talked a lot about police and the sort of code of blue and the fact that police officers don't like to charge other police officers. This is a situation where a prosecutor appears to be bending over backwards to find reasons not to prosecute these guards, not to hold them accountable under the same standard as you and me. That's a serious national problem. It's a problem in this state. It's intolerable. It's why people don't have confidence in law enforcement and government in some circles. And the state's chief law enforcement officer, the attorney general, needs to investigate this to determine whether there have been any violations of the law, or at the very least to clear the air and determine how this could have happened.
Of course, there's another major issue within all of this, which is how the patients are treated, like inmates at Bridgewater State Hospital. And I wonder what you hope will learn or change based on the Messier case.
Well, you know, I've been doing this work against Bridgewater State Hospital for 30 years. And when there's a death or a scandal, it gets a little bit better. And it always reverts back to where it was. You have a toxic mix of correctional officers. And there's some good correctional officers who try to do their job. But they're hopelessly ill-equipped to deal with people like Josh Messier and my other clients, people who are not criminals, people who have mental illness, people who are sent to Bridgewater because of the unwillingness of the State Department of Mental Health to treat them, and they go into prison. And these guards don't have the orientation or the training to deal with a severely mentally ill. We are the only state in the country that allows this to happen, for people not serving criminal sentences to stay for prolonged periods of time in a prison where they are punished for their mental illness. It's intolerable. So we're hoping, and we've had discussions with Governor Baker's administration, that this will finally be the impetus for reform at this, you know, really archaic Dickensian institution that is a tragedy both for the patients, and I also think the correctional officers who work there, they're not equipped to handle it. The results have been disastrous. Two other deaths in restraints since Josh Messier died in 2009. It's really intolerable.
Eric McLeish is an attorney at Clark, Hunt, Ahern, and Embry in Cambridge. He represented Joshua Messier's mother, Lisa Brown, and now he's called for an investigation into the office of District Attorney Timothy Cruz, who decided not to pursue criminal charges in Messier's death. Eric McLeish, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Revelations of underinflated footballs, the Wells Report, NFL penalties against the New England Patriots and quarterback Tom Brady, and Deflategate continues.
And it's not over yet. Tom Brady has until 5 p.m. tomorrow to appeal, and his agent says he will.
Joining us now is Bill Littlefield, host of NPR's Only a Game. He's with us every Wednesday to talk about sports. Hey, Bill.
Hello, Anthony.
So let's talk about what's next. Under the NFL's collective bargaining agreement, Brady can appeal his four-game suspension. He has until tomorrow at 5 to file that appeal. His agent said he will. So what happens next?
Well, what frequently happens with these appeals is that it's somewhere down the line the length of the suspension is reduced, and I think probably lots of Patriots fans hope that that's exactly what will happen in this case. Beyond that, I would hesitate to speculate.
How about the Patriots? They were fined a record-tying $1 million, stripped of two draft picks. Can they appeal?
Yeah, technically they can. The question is whether they will. Robert Kraft has been critical of the Wells report, but he's also said that fighting the league and extending the debate would prove to be futile. I don't know whether he said that before the back and forth he said, she said, he said began between Kraft and the investigator, because the investigator has pointed out that at the time he was appointed, Mr. Wells was appointed, Mr. Kraft said that his appointment was perfectly fine as far as he was concerned.
Bill, on social media, lots of Patriot fans have been promoting the hashtag No Brady, No Banner, meaning they want the team to postpone raising the Super Bowl banner until after Brady's suspension ends. But in other parts of the country, all this has confirmed the reputation of the Patriots and Brady as cheaters. How big a hit does the Patriots brand take here?
Well, I think it depends entirely on who's viewing the entire catastrophe or comedy, depending on your point of view. People who regard the Patriots as cheaters and who have regarded the Patriots as cheaters for a long time through various incidents over several years will have their view reinforced. And people who regard the Patriots as victims because everybody's always out to get them because, like the old New York Yankees, they win a lot, will regard the Patriots as victims and continue to do so.
Bill, Ted Wells, the attorney who ran the Deflategate investigation, has done work for the NFL in the past. So he was criticized for maybe not being as independent as some people would like. He held a press conference yesterday to answer those criticisms. Let's take a listen.
When I was appointed to be the independent investigator, no one at the Patriots or in Mr. Brady's camp raised any issue about my independence or my integrity to judge the evidence impartially and fairly. In fact, Mr. Kraft, to my recollection, publicly said he welcomed my appointment. I think it is wrong to criticize my independence just because you disagree with my findings.
And Bill, one of the recurring themes in all of these high-profile suspensions that we've had in the NFL in the last year or so is how far an employer can go based on their own internal investigations to punish an employee. Do you have any concerns about that process here?
I have fewer concerns about that process in the Tom Brady current case than I had in many previous cases where the investigations tended to sweep all sorts of things that were much more serious than whether the football was inflated under the rug. That has changed somewhat, largely because of the videotaping of some of the the actual events. You cannot sweep under the rug a man punching his soon-to-be wife in the head and knocking her out. So happily, these things are being taken more seriously by the league. I think that's fine. Whether Tom Brady has been caught up in that I suppose, again, depends on your viewpoint.
Of course, underneath all of this, there's an incredibly popular team, an incredibly popular game. And for fans that just want to sit back and relax on a Sunday or a Monday or a Thursday or whenever they're playing.
Pretty much any day they like, yes.
The real impact here could be that the Patriots could be worse in the fall, right?
Well, at least temporarily, I suppose. But wouldn't it be a great story if Tom Brady were suspended for however many games, two, four, whatever it turns out to be, and when he comes back to a 4-0 team?
Right. Jimmy Garoppolo does to Brady what Brady did to Bledsoe. Right?
Or poor the guy who Lou Gehrig replaced. You know? Brady has to win his spot back.
There's some larger issues in this story, though, that I want to ask you about. There's this sort of win-at-all-costs mentality that we sometimes see in sports as well as in life sometime. So there's the issue of how parents talk with their children about Tom Brady, whether he cheated, why he cheated. Do you take away some bigger lesson from this?
Again, I think based on the kind of vox that I've heard on the radio and on TV where fans have spoken out on this, it depends on the parent. Some parents are going to say, now look, Johnny, as you can see, you can't cheat. You got to play by the rules. Otherwise, you'll get caught and you'll be suspended and you'll be disgraced and you'll lose your endorsements. And other parents are going to say, he won the Super Bowl, Johnny, and that's how you win the Super Bowl. You go after every edge you can possibly get, and if you get caught, hey, that's the price of doing business.
Bill, in our last 90 seconds or so here, let's turn to another football-related issue. The president of Brigham and Women's Hospital, Dr. Elizabeth G. Nabel, was recently named the NFL's top medical advisor. She released a statement yesterday, talked about her view of the game and said football's safer than it's ever been and that the league has a genuine commitment to a serious discussion about the issues surrounding the game. What's your reaction to those comments?
My reaction is that the NFL picked the right medical advisor. They got the person who is willing to say what the league has been saying. We're making it safer. Nobody need worry. She also said that if her children were young enough, she would allow them to play, which is directly in contrast to some of what some NFL veterans have said about their children.
All right. Well, I want to close with a comment from Dan Shaughnessy's column today. Deflategate gives the Red Sox freedom to sink into the basement of the AL East while no one is looking. And that seems to be what they're doing. Bill Littlefield is the host of NPR's Only a Game, which airs Saturdays at 7 a.m. and again at 7 p.m. on WBUR. He joins us every Wednesday to talk sports. Bill, thanks so much.
Thank you, Anthony.
Radio Boston is a production of WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Doug Trabue.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.